Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is IBM WebSphere Application Server Clusters. Today's presenter is Kumaran Nathan. Kumaran has more than 7 years of WebSphere Application Server customer support and testing experience in multiple versions from version 5 to version 7. Areas of specialization include install, application management, and system management. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Kumaran.
Thanks, Joseph. I'm Kumaran Nathan. Today's presentation, we are going to talk about WebSphere application server clusters. We are going to talk more about how it works and what are the new features in V6, V7 we introduced. And our main goal is to focus more on the admin console, the features that we introduced in version 6.1 and 7.0. And there are a few unexplained things even in the information center, which we may be discussing about it today. Let's move on to next slide. So today we are going to talk about the big picture of clustering, what is a cluster, and what are the types of cluster, and how it works, and then we are going to talk about the component details. Mostly we'll be focusing on the admin console, as I said earlier, not much on WSAdmin. This presentation will be much useful for the people who are on V5 or V6 or now and planning to migrate to 6.1 and 7.0. And it will be also useful for those people who are already on 6.1 or 7.0. So it will be useful for everyone who are on all the releases, actually. And we'll be also talking about some of the troubleshooting tips and how we can troubleshoot the clustering, how we can troubleshoot some of the ripple start, how we can troubleshoot the status of the application servers and cluster members. Let's move on to next slide. Let's move on to slide number 4. So clusters. Most of you on this call might be much familiar with what is a cluster, actually, but I just wanted to give a basic introduction on what is that. So we have been having these cluster concepts in version 4 or 3.5, actually, and we have added a lot of features, a lot of things in each and every releases. So what is a cluster? A cluster is a set of servers that are managed together and participate in workload management. Suppose if you have just a base application server, you'll be having only one standalone server there. So if the server goes down in any failover scenario or your system crash, and your application running on the server will also go down. So there won't be any failover in that case. So we have something called Deployment Manager. In the Deployment Manager, you can federate or add the standalone nodes to the Deployment Manager. So if you have one node or you have two nodes or you can have three nodes, you can have multiple nodes federated into the Deployment Manager. And there you can create a cluster with minimum of one member or two member. There is no limitation, actually. You can go up to a number of members as long as your machine is capable of running those servers. So if you have two servers, for example, in the cluster, and if one server goes down, the request of the one server will be automatically routed to the next server. So you will have 100% availability of your application in case of any failover to your application server JVM or in case of your machine failover if it is spread across the network. If the node is installed on two different machines, then you will have your machine failover as well. So the cluster is a set of servers that are managed together and participate in workload management. And cluster also enable enterprise application to be highly available because requests are automatically routed to the running server in the event of a failure. This is what I was explaining. I mean, if you have two servers and if one goes down, automatically all the requests, the pending requests, will be routed to the running server. So the servers that are member of a cluster can be on different host machines. You are not tied to just one machine. You can have your deployment manager on your AX. You can have one of your node on Solaris, and you can have another node on Windows, or you can have another node on Linux. So there is no limitation like that. You can have it on all different nodes, and you can federate all those to your deployment manager. And it's always better to be on different host mission in case of your mission failure so that the request can be routed to the next mission, JVM. So when you talk about the deployment manager, it's nothing but a cell, and there will be only one cell in deployment manager, and that cell can have one cluster or multiple cluster, or it can run without any clusters, actually. I'm assuming everyone is familiar about the deployment manager and a little bit about the node agent and a little bit about the application server, because we are not going to talk anything about it in this presentation. We are just going to focus only on the clusters. So servers that belong to a cluster or member of the cluster set and must have all identical application components deployed on them. So once you create or add the application server into the cluster, we call it as cluster member. So cluster is kind of your name of that cluster, and the actual JVM is your cluster member. So all that, once you add the application server, so it will become a cluster member and it will be part of the cluster. And each and every cluster member inside the cluster should have the same configuration. When you create a new cluster member, that changes or whatever you have the information on the first cluster member will be propagated to the next. And there are some confusion over it. There are a lot of changes from version 6 to version 6.1 and 7.0. So we'll be talking more about it today, and hopefully everyone will be cleared after this presentation. Let's move on to slide number 5. So this is a basic thing, and it's been like this for a long, long time. There are two types of clusters. One is vertical, one is horizontal cluster. The vertical cluster is, if all the member resides on same machine or on the same node, we call it as vertical cluster. If it is spread across the network, then we call it as horizontal cluster. I mean, if the one member, cluster member, is sitting on one machine and another cluster member is sitting on another machine, so we call that as horizontal cluster. You can configure either type of cluster or have a combination of vertical and horizontal cluster as well in your cluster configuration. There is no restriction. Let's move on to slide number 6. So application server clustering. So we'll be seeing how to configure this cluster today and how we can manipulate few runtime configuration in the cluster. And as I said earlier, the main focus will be today, in today's presentation, is going to be on the admin console. What are the new features and improvement and usabilities and serviceability we changed and we added in V7 and V6 so that it's kind of more usable to the end users. We'll be talking more about all this, the buttons you see on the right-hand side and all those stuff we'll be talking about in the later slides. Let's move on to slide 7. So component details. In this component details, we are going to talk about each and every steps we use or we follow through in the administrative console. And we will be going through how we are going to create a cluster and what are the changes we made in the earlier releases. And we are going to talk about all the good stuff. Move on to slide number 8. So change to existing clustering features. So we modified a lot of things in each and every panel in latest release. I'm talking about both V6 and 6.1 and 7.0. Until 6.0, it's all a little different, and we modify a lot of things in 6.1 and 7.0. So we are going to see the cluster wizards panel and cluster collection panel and the cluster member collection panel and cluster member panel, application server panel, and cluster template. We are going to talk about on each and every screen what are the new features we added and what are the changes we have made into the latest releases. I may not have a presentation or a slide for cluster template. I think I do, one or two, but we'll be talking more about that. As I said, it is kind of a little confusing part for most of the customers that I dealt with so far. And I worked on many PMRs on these issues, actually. They talked about, I had this template on V6, and I'm trying to use it in V6.1. It's different. Now I migrated from 6.1 to 7.0. It's kind of different. So there were a lot of confusion over it, and probably we can talk more about it in the later slides. Now let's move on to slide number 9. So this is the first panel. When you go to your admin console on your left-hand side, you click on a cluster. You want to create a cluster, and you click on it. And you, on the first panel, you view cluster name. That's kind of pretty much same on your earlier release, starting from V5, actually. So you click on it, enter your cluster name there. It's just a logical name, cluster. It's just a logical name sitting on yourself. And then you click on the step, next step, and that will bring you to this panel, actually, where you can create your cluster member. So in this cluster member page, you first enter your first cluster member. The cluster member is nothing but your JVM. It's nothing but your application server. As I said earlier, once you create a JVM inside a cluster, it's called cluster member. So you put your member name there, first text field, and you select on which node you want the cluster member to reside. It can be on any node, but you can choose any of those there. And you can put your weight in there, and you can say, I want to generate unique HTTP port. Make sure you select that, because we have seen many issues with the port conflict, which may prevent your app server to coming up. And the core group, you can select which one you want. These things are all kind of pretty much same like your V6, and it's nothing changed here. But on the bottom, you see the select from the first cluster member, the basic for first cluster member. This is kind of a little bit changed. In 6.0, you will have only two options. And also, in those, it may or may not appear, the server name. Suppose if you don't have any server name, you won't even have an option there to choose anything from there. And all of a sudden, you go and create application server. It comes back and appears here. And there are like kind of a lot of confusion over there, actually. That's one thing. The other thing about in 6.1 and 7.0 is if you look into all the radio buttons over there, if you select one of those, all other radio buttons will be disabled. I mean, so that you'll be clear which one you have selected there. But you should be able to select the other radio buttons, but other than immediately if you select, for example, if you select the second one, the first one will get disabled automatically, actually. This removes a lot of confusion over presence or absence of fields, and it's more straightforward now in V6.1. Also, since we are on this page, let's talk a little bit about how or what you should do about this when you create the first cluster member. Because creating the first cluster member is one of the important part actually when you create a cluster. So the first option is to create the member using an application server template. Either you can have a template created already, which we'll be talking about it in later slide. But when you install the product, the very first time you will get one template, which is going to be your default template. Or if you can also create your own template, and that's going to reside in the configuration folder, and you can select it over here. And the second option is create the member using an existing application server as a template. So what it means, for example, you have created a node, and that comes with the default server 1 server, and you federated the server 1 server to the node, the deployment manager. And now the deployment manager will know only one server, server 1. So if you choose this option here, the second option, and say create the member using an existing server as a template, this first cluster member will inherit all the property from the server 1 server. For example, you create a JDBC resource, or you create your JMS resource, or any resource, or you're setting up a trace string, or anything like that that's going to reside on either server.xml file or resource.xml file, which is going to be on that server. So when you select this option, option 2, I want to inherit all the property of that existing server, so all the property from there will be incorporated into your new cluster member. So it can have all the options and it can have all the resources from the existing cluster member. That's one good thing about it. And the third option is create the member by converting an existing application server. I don't think we had this one on V6. What it means, if you have the server 1 server and you want that server 1 server itself as your cluster member, as your first cluster member, then you can do that. So it's going to, the server 1 will be changed into your cluster member. The fourth option is create an empty cluster. We give you option to create an empty cluster and you can come back and create the cluster member later. Let's move on to next slide, slide number 10. So adding additional cluster member. This we moved it to another step. We used to have it in step one, step two. We put all the information in step two, and there were a lot of confusion over that, what I'm doing and how many cluster members were there and all those stuff. So we came up with a new idea, new panel, so that it's more usable and more clear to everyone. So adding this panel is used for both cluster and cluster member wizard when adding additional member or being added to the cluster. All existing cluster member are displayed. So this is a very good thing about this new panels actually. So if you look at the right side of this panel actually, you see go to the bottom and you see there my first cluster member and my additional cluster member. So all the existing cluster member will be displayed here on this tab so that you know how many cluster members you have. It's not that the member that you are adding now is going to be displayed. No, it's going to display all the cluster members over here. So in earlier release, modification of existing cluster member is not allowed. I mean, you will not be able to modify or edit anything in this page, actually, but now you will be able to. But first cluster member, whatever you created, that you may not be able to edit or delete. But any additional cluster member, you may be able to edit or delete. In previous releases, and it was not clear whether or not a member was being added to the list or edited. So this is one thing we really kind of wanted to change in the latest release. You see a button over here called Add Member that used to be Apply. So you put a new member and cluster member and say Apply, it means Add. And if you want to edit also, that's Apply. So there were a lot of confusion over that, like what it means, whether I'm creating it and you have to put it and say Apply. Some customers, what they do, they just put the name and click next, go to the final panel and say done, and that may not be even added actually. Let's move on to slide 11. So this is the summary panel in the cluster wizard, and this is the last panel. This used to be in a text format, which was not clear at all, but we came up with readable format, the text field format to this table format, so that it's more readable. You can notice here the configure HTTP session memory to memory application. If it's set to false, it won't be created. If it's set to true, in previous releases, all your HTTP session replication, memory to memory replication, you need to go to individual web container or your any other container. You have to go there and you have to create the memory session and all. But in 6.1 onwards, if you say true here, it will be created automatically even under your web container. You don't have to go and reconfigure or you don't have to go and add anything over there. But we are not going to talk more about the memory-to-memory replication. It's an entirely different topic, and I do have a link for it. If you are interested, probably you can go ahead and listen to that presentation. Now let's move on to slide number 12. So this is after you created your cluster, you come back to this panel, and go back to your cluster link, click on it, and you see a newly added cluster there. So you see my cluster. And in earlier releases, you will have a link for cluster member, but you have to click on the each and every cluster member there to see the cluster member link to go to the next panel. Now we added a new twisty over there where it will show plus or minus, and you just expand it, and it's going to display all your cluster member there, and also it will display your weight so that you don't have to worry about, like, how many cluster members I have and what are the weights of those cluster members. So when you click on the details link or the button, it will take you to the next panel, and it will give you all information about your cluster member. And you can also navigate to the cluster member collection by clicking on cluster members link. So there will be a link, and you can click on the link, cluster member link on the top of it, and it will also take you to that page. Now let's move on to next slide. So cluster member collection panel. Once you click on the detail, it will take you to this page. It will display all the cluster members here, and it will display all the information about your cluster members. The major thing I wanted to focus here on is this, the couple of things, actually. One is, when you click on the detail panel, it takes you to this panel. In the earlier releases, you will not see any of those weight, configured weight or runtime weight, or nothing will be displayed over here. And if you want to see the weight of the cluster member. You have to click on it, go there, remember or write it down somewhere, and come back to this panel again, click on the next cluster member, and then remember what is your weight of the cluster member. Since we are talking about the weight, let me just explain what it means, actually. In this case, I have given example as 2-2. So it means, suppose if you have 4 requests coming in through your plugin to your cluster member, 2 requests will go into your first cluster member, 2 requests will go into the second cluster member. Suppose if you have weight of 6 and 2, or for example, 10 and 2, right? 10 you give to first cluster member, 2 to the second cluster member. So you do the math. I mean, so the request, like if you get 6 requests, pretty much 5 requests will go into your first cluster member and 1 request will go into the second cluster member. So it depends on like how many load your cluster member or can take, and based on that you can configure your weight. And there is something called runtime weight. If you want to change the configured weight to the runtime so that you don't have to really recycle your cluster members. If you update anything in the configured weight, you have to recycle the cluster member. But if you put anything in the runtime weight, you don't really have to recycle. So immediately, dynamically, it will update your JVM and it will update your cluster member. And one thing is like it will only the RMI, IOP, or EAP requests can dynamically get updated and can make use of the new weight. But your normal HTTP request, your server request, you have to update in the configured weight and you have to recycle the cluster member. That's a limitation, actually. And there's a new button called Make Idle. And if you go select your cluster member on your left-hand side and say Make Idle, your cluster member will become idle so that no request will be even processed and all your runtime weight and configured weight will become zero there. And there is one more button over there, Terminate. I won't advise anyone to use that button, actually, because better you use Stop. That is the best thing to stop a cluster member. And you can also use Immediate Stop, but if you use the Immediate Stop, any pending request sitting on the cluster member will not be served. I mean, there won't be any quiet timeout for that. For example, we have something called quiet timeout, like set to 30 seconds by default. So any pending request, your JMS request, or it could be your servlet request sitting on that cluster member will be served within that quiet timeout, and then only server will shut down. If you do an immediate stop, it's not going to look for anything. Immediately, it just goes and stops the JVM. And if you do a terminate, you do it only if your stop and immediate stop is not even responding or you are not getting any response back from the. It's kind of you are killing the process, actually. Let's move on to next slide. This is another new thing in the latest release, cluster member panel. The application server attributes are now displayed on the cluster member page. Now you are clicking on a cluster member one, for example, and it will take you to this page. And if you look into this panel, first three, the member name, weight, and unique ID, only these three are displayed in the old releases, actually. In the new release, you have all the attributes, everything displayed over here. And instead of navigating to application server page to change the attributes, now you can change everything on this panel. In the earlier release, you have to remember the cluster member name. You have to go to the application server panel, click on the member name or click on the server name, and go there and modify any attributes. But on this release, you can modify everything on this panel. Whatever you see there, you will see here also. Now let's move on to the next slide, slide number 15. Now, this is the application server panel. This panel, you will get it when you go to your admin console and click on your application server, and it will take you to this panel, actually. We added a new thing called preference in this application server panel. It's kind of a very useful for everyone. There is actually a preference, and there is, you see, something called include cluster member in the collection. If you select this, then on the right-hand side, you see your, on the chart, you see on the table, actually. You see select name, node, version, cluster name. And this cluster name column will be displayed, actually, if you select this include cluster name in the collection. And if you uncheck this guy, the table itself will be disappeared, and it won't even show all the clusters in this application server list, actually. So it's a very good thing about it, and you know when you are on application server panel, you know whether it is a cluster member or it's application server, and if you want, you can show it, or if you want, you can just uncheck the box, actually, so that it won't display. Let's move on to next slide. Cluster template. This is one of the interesting thing and one of the new thing which I just want to make sure everyone is clear about. Although it's a SM function, but we did incorporate most of the things into the console. The cluster template is created when first cluster member is added to the cluster. This is a very important point, actually. So whatever you choose, that is, you choose on the set 2 when you create a cluster member, that's your cluster member template, actually. But when you create, actually, the cluster, when you go to the cluster and you select any cluster member, or even though you select the default, whatever you select there, for the very first time, we create a template for that cluster, actually, and we store that in the configuration. We did not do that in the earlier release. And when you create a first cluster member now, we create a template and store it in the configuration. For any changes, suppose if you created a cluster with one cluster member and you have a template created and you go to your console making 20 modification or 40 modification to that cluster member, and then you go back and say, okay, I want to add a new cluster member now, and you create a new cluster member, and that new cluster member is not going to inherit all the property from your cluster member 1. It's going to take everything from your template. So whatever changes you make on the cluster member 1, you need to modify that in the template also. Let me tell you the reason why we changed it, actually. We had a lot of issues in the past where you create two, for example, you have two cluster member, you modified it, and you created then and the next cluster member, everything goes fine. And you come back and delete the first cluster member, and we never know which one is going to be your template, which one we should use. And the second one will become first one now, and any newly created cluster member is going to inherit the property from the second cluster member. So there were always a risk, and there is always a confusion which cluster member is going to be your template. So we said, okay, let's avoid all this confusion. Let's just create a template, put it outside the configuration of the server, and whenever you create a new cluster member, let's take that template and add that as a cluster member. So if you are making a change, and I've seen many PMRs, like I made the changes and I'm not seeing it in the new cluster member because you did not update the template, actually. Unfortunately, on v6.1, you have to use a WSAdmin to update the template. You cannot use, there is no option in the admin console to update those templates. But fortunately, we have that in v7. We can talk about more about that in the next slide, actually. Let's move on to the next slide, 17. So as I said, on v6.1, you don't have an option to update the cluster template. Only in the console, the only option is to use the WSAdmin to update the template, actually. So the template is the one be created, and when you are creating any new cluster member, it's going to inherit property from that template, actually. Just a reminder. On 7.0, you can update the template. You can update the cluster member template, click on it, go to the console, and click on the cluster members. It will take you there, and if you have created the template, there's a button called template, actually. You can go to the template, and you can modify your template, whatever you want there, actually. You'll have a link over here so that you click on it. It's going to show exactly like your cluster, I mean, your application server attribute panel. So you will be able to modify everything to the template in the console itself in v7. So now let's move on to the next slide, 18. So we are going to talk about troubleshooting, a little bit about troubleshooting, some confusing part over there in troubleshooting, why this is displaying, why it is not displaying. I'm just going to talk a little bit about troubleshooting here. Let's move on to the next slide. So troubleshooting, we are going to see the cluster wizard filtering and cluster member status issues and all those stuff. So in the cluster wizard filtering, how we are going to filter the cluster, it's going to be based on the node dropdown and template dropdown and server as template dropdown. So let's move on to the next slide. So troubleshooting clusters, this is cluster wizard filtering node dropdown. When you create the first member, suppose you have federated 20 nodes into the SEL or Deployment Manager, all 20 nodes will be displayed here, actually. Once you added the first node, and when you try to add the second node, so the based on your first node, all other attributes will be changed here. For example, the first node belongs to, suppose if you have 3 or 4 node groups, right? By default, there will be default node group, and if you want, you can create more node groups there. So if it belongs to the different node group, those nodes will not be displayed here, actually, in the drop-down. In V6, we did not have this one. We will allow you to select any node, no matter whether what node group it belongs to. Suppose you added like 100 cluster members and go to the final panel and click on finish, it will say, oh, you are not allowed to add a cluster member which belongs to different node group. That would fail there. So we kind of filtered here. And we had many customers wondering why we are not seeing all those nodes once we added the first cluster member. So here is the answer for that. And nodes are filtered based on version of the existing member. The member can only be added to the cluster with the same version as the existing version. For example, if you added the version of 6.1 member, only the 6.1 will be added, actually. But if you migrate, everything should be fine. But when you're adding the cluster member, it will let you add only that particular release version of your application server. Let's move on to the next slide, slide 21. So this is a template drop-down. So this will be based on your OS, actually. If you are on distributed, we are going to display only the distributed templates. And if you are on ZOS, we are going to display only on the ZOS template. And again, it's going to be based on the, for each and every version, there will be a template created, actually. Suppose in a mixed-cell environment, if you are on 6.0 or if you are on 7.0 or 7.0, right? So we'll create a template for each and every releases. So it will be filtered based on your OS, and the template will be displayed over here. And once you create your first cluster member, and only that particular template will be displayed. Or otherwise, whatever template you create, as I said earlier, you always have one template, which is your default template. The first time you install a product, you get a default template. After that, you can go and create a number of templates, whatever you want. And the best thing would be to create a template and put all your information in one template. Like you want to create resources, JMS resource, JDBC resource, or put a trace string or whatever, right? Put everything into the template, create the template, and leave it there. And then go ahead and create your cluster member, including your first cluster member. It depends on that template, right? So that you will know everything over there you are incorporating, and you are going to use it in your all your cluster members, because all cluster members are going to take it from that template. So it's all usual stuff, and let's move on to next slide, 22. Troubleshooting clusters, and it's a continuation of that, and it's now filtering based on the servers as template. Application servers are filtered based on the version of the nodes. Only those servers that reside on a node which is the same version or the selected node will be displayed. I mean, as I said, like if you already created one, or if you're creating the first one, and if you choose 6.1 there node, and leave only the 6.1 node template will be displayed, actually. I mean, we are not going to display all of the templates. Let's move on to next slide, slide 23. Cluster member status. This is one of the kind of a major thing we get every day, at least like 2-3 PMRs on this. I mean, why my cluster is running, I can go and grab my JVM, or I can see it is running on my Windows, the task manager. But why don't I see the right status in the console? That's because we modified a few things in V6.1 onwards, actually. There is something called the status cache. It introduced in V6.0, actually. Yeah, you may see this problem in 6.0 as well. Before that, we used to use the notification to send it back from your application server, which is your cluster member, to your deployment manager saying, okay, I'm up and running. And this is how the communication works. Team manager will always be talking to your node agent, and node agent will always be talking to your application server. And if you do anything from the console, it's running on deployment manager. It will request node agent. Node agent will pass a request back to the app server. So the app server will send the notification back to the DMGR and saying, okay, I'm up and running or stuck. In a small environment, it is okay to do so. Like 5 server, 10 server, 15 is okay. I've seen some customers like using like 300, even 400 servers in the production environment. So in that case, like all the notification is passing around here and there every minute or every 30 seconds whenever you refresh, right? So it costs a lot of memory and it costs a lot of issues with those. So we came up with something like, why do we need to refresh all the time? Why do we need to send the notification every minute or 30 seconds, right? So we said, okay, let's come up with something called status cache. We store all the cache information, let the notification come to the cache, store it, keep it in one place. And whenever there are some changes, then let's update the status cache. And until then, let's not do it. So what happened here, sometimes the MB notification is not coming back properly or something, not updating the status cache when you are restarting or stopping the server. There is no definite reason for it, or there is no certain time it works or fails or anything like that. But it's kind of not often, but it does happen actually. This could be that if you see your panel, you select, say, start, but it actually started, but it's showing here as red, saying it's not started. This may be a status cache issue, and probably usually recycling the deployment manager would solve the problem. But I would also recommend to just stop, and if you're stopping the deployment manager, remove all the temp files if you have any config temp or WSTEM files. If you don't need, it's not mandatory, but if you want, it would be. It's another additional thing to do, to remove it and then start the deployment manager. Hopefully, it should get your status back. The status, when you talk about the status, dark green means stopped. Pretty dark green is started. Light green is partially started. It means like if you have two cluster members and one is running, one is stopped, actually stopped, right? So we show the partial status there, actually. If it is unknown, then it's something wrong, actually. It's nothing to do with the status cache. If it shows unknown or something weird you see in there other than stopped or started or partial start, something wrong with your node agent. So node agent itself is not discovered with the deployment manager. That's the only time we show it as unknown here, because there is no way even we'll know the status of that app server or your cluster members. Yeah, I just want to talk a little bit about the cluster features over here. I didn't have any particular slide for it. The good thing about it is RippleStack. So most of you might have used the RippleStack and maybe using it every time. And you might have experienced a lot of problems with the RippleStack as well. The good thing about RippleStack is you have 5 cluster member or 10 cluster member in a cluster, and you don't want to stop all the cluster member. If you are in your production system, you want one to go down, one to come up, and then next go down, come back. For example, you configured a new application or have deployed a new application, and you want to maintain the 100% availability of the application. I would say 99.99 because I've seen some issues like in-flight JMS transactions sometimes get canceled during this. Suppose just if you have two cluster members, right? If you have more than that, I don't think it will be a problem, but just to be safer side. You select the cluster and say RippleStack. It goes to the first cluster member, stops that cluster member, and starts the cluster member, and then once the notification sends, this is up, then it will move on to the next cluster member, actually, and then it will stop it and start it. And in order to make use of this function or full use of this function, I would recommend to be on the latest release. There are like 3 to 4 defects being fixed. I'm not sure on which release, or I'm not sure about the APA number. It's not on top of my head, but I'm pretty sure there are some defects, and we fixed few of those, actually. So in latest release, it should be in pretty good shape, actually. Unless, I've seen issues like you may have a size of application like 200 MB, 300 MB, and you're deploying it and doing RippleStack, and maybe it's taking, or you have more load on the cluster member, and it always takes like 15 minutes, 20 minutes to stop the application server. Those kind of stuff, you may see some weird problems with RippleStack, but to avoid those, we have some custom properties in the JVM custom properties. Maybe if you go to the information center, if you search for custom property, JVM custom property, you will find a lot of information, and you can make use of that. That's all pretty good custom properties, but you have to be on certain level even to use those custom properties, actually. Another thing I want to talk about is the rollout update. The rollout update, we don't have anything on this cluster, actually. That will come into the picture only when you deploy an application and you map that application into a cluster. After you deploy it, It'll give you an option, what you want to do, manage application, roll out application, or save. If you click on save, it's all done there. But if you click on roll out update after in the final panel of your application update, right? Click on roll out update. And if you have two cluster members, and what it does, it saves, synchronize to the first node, and starts the cluster member, and then go to the next node and do the same thing. And but if all cluster members are on the same node, that's not going to be the ideal situation, and you don't want to do that because all the cluster members on one node will be stopped and restarted at the same time. So make sure it's on the different node, actually, on the cluster member. So that's a very good thing, actually, that's a rollout update. Now let's move on to the next slide, which is a summary. So we talked about what is a cluster, the basic information about cluster, why we need a cluster to have more failover. If one system goes down, the request can be passed to another system or to the JVM, have more cluster, and make sure you have configured with your web server and put it in the DMZ and make use of this cluster. And there were some questions about, can I stop the deployment manager and all? Yeah, pretty much you can stop the deployment manager, but there won't be any administration going on. For example, you may not be able to stop or start the cluster, but WLM should work fine, actually. You should not have an issue with the WLM there. So we talked about the clustering and how it works and all, and we talked about the new features in v6.1 and 7.0. We talked about the Twisty, and we talked about the template. The template is, I know, like, it's kind of a new thing we change from release to release, pretty much actually not every release, from 6.0 to 6.1. That's the only change would be when you create the first cluster member on 6.0 onwards, we are going to create a template and put it and store it in a configuration. In earlier release, the first cluster member itself is a template. So whenever you create a new additional cluster member, it will inherit the property from the first cluster member. But now onwards, it's going to read it from your template, actually. That's the only major thing. And we talked about a lot of new things in the console to include the cluster name in the panel, and you can modify, and we talked about the filtering, and we talked about a lot of things, actually. And we also talked about some of those troubleshooting things in the clusters. The major thing you may see is the ripple start issue you may see, or mostly we get PMRs, like the status issues, why my status is not right, the cluster status. And when you delete a cluster, even the cluster member will be deleted automatically. I mean, so be aware, like when you delete, you do delete. And also, you know, there is something called command line assistance, actually. That is, if you are good with scripting, right? I mean, we talk more about admin console here. But if you're good with scripting and you want to make everything with Jackal or JSON, each and every panel, most of the panels in V7 particularly, we had a lot of enhancement to the command line assistance. So it will be on the right-hand side of your panel. It will show, can you tell me or show me the last action made on this panel? So, for example, you are creating a cluster on your console, and you finish and go to the last panel and click on the last action made. So it is going to show you the JSON, the script, JSON script, which you can use to create a cluster member. I mean, it's going to show how you would have created using the WSAdmin. So you will have a lot of things, the command line assistant in the console, not only for a cluster and a few other things as well. If you are good with scripting or you want to use scripting automation, make use of that. And for cluster session replication, as I said earlier, that's not our topic, and we are not going to talk about it in this session. If you really want how the memory-to-memory replication or database replication or however, like, I mean, go through this presentation, it's a pretty good one, and I hope you'll like that, Paul. Let's move on to the next slide, additional WebSphere product. So this chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcasts, like the one you attended today, and access previously recorded presentation as well. Developers work offering in-depth technical information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Notifications link on the our product page lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. And pretty much that's all I have for today. I will pass it back to Joseph. Maybe we can open the line for some questions. Joseph, back to you.
Thank you, Kumaran, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the line for questions.
Our first question comes from Ramu Kara. Your line is open.
Hello.
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Actually, my question is regarding the cluster member configuration weight.
Okay.
You said that if the weights are 2 and 5, then if the requests are 10, it will go proportionately, right?
If it is both 2, 2, it's going to distribute with the same stuff. I mean, request, if you get 500, 500, 1,000, right, it will go to 500, 500, actually.
So if I make it 0, 0, what will happen?
It's kind of, you're pretty much, you're making it as, I make idle, actually. You are making your JVM itself as idle.
Meaning no request will be served?
Yeah, kind of, actually, yeah. It's, you know, I've never tested that, but it's pretty much when you do a make idle, right, it's going to set your values to 0. But I think the request will not be passed to the cluster. It's kind of a pretty much you are making your cluster members as idle. But I never tested that, actually.
No, the reason that I ask is because if I put 4-4, meaning I'm trying to send the request equally. Is it correct?
Exactly.
So, but it is not same if I put 0-0. It is, I mean, it will make idle.
Exactly. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Can we have the clusters in Express and base versions?
You mean have one cluster member from Express and one from the base application server?
No. Can we create a cluster in Express and base?
No, you cannot.
Oh, okay.
You have to be on the deployment manager to have a cluster.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Nassar Rashtan. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Two questions, actually. One is on the immediate stop and the terminate. Now, if you have a monitoring policy set up to restart the for the node agent to restart the JVM, and if you do immediate stop or terminate, will the node agent restart the JVM or the override?
No. Node agent will restart the JVM only in case of unexpected failure of the JVM. Right. I mean, in this case, you are doing it from the console. Node agent will register it and will not try to restart the application server.
Okay. It's unlike when you kill the JVM then.
Exactly. When you kill the JVM or when JVM crashes or if it is hanging, that time no monitoring policy will come into the picture and it is going to restart, your node agent is going to restart your application server. But if you do it from the console, say terminate or anything, node agent knows that you are doing it from the console. It's never, because node agent is the one is going to issue to the app server saying, okay, go immediately stop it, right? So it knows that it is issuing a command. It's not going to restart it.
Gotcha. The other question is on the weights. If you have the plugin that determines the load balance, does the weight matter on the cluster members?
If you have an external weight balancing, right? If you have, just think about, you have only one web server spraying out all the requests to the cluster directly, right, into the plugin, right? So that time this weight will come into the picture, actually. If you have a load balancer and doing all your load stuff there, and it's not going to be a big, I mean, issue on this cluster here, on the, I mean, the one that you're configuring here on this cluster.
I'm sorry, I'm not following.
Suppose if you have one web server and one plugin, right, and you have 100 requests coming in through your plugin. So that time, this is going to take precedence and this is going to be valuable at that time. This weight is going to come into the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have your own load balancer monitoring all the loads and directing into the plugin and say, okay, I want directly go 100 requests to this cluster member, 100 to this JVM, whatever, right, that time this may not be a good one, actually. This will not be. This weight, whatever you have, may not make sense at the time.
Okay, so the weight on the cluster member itself will not make a difference at that point.
At that point, exactly. Because you are doing everything outside the JVM and you are doing it on your outside your plugin itself, saying, okay, send this much request to this cluster member directly.
Gotcha.
So it won't even go through the our WLM. This is our WLM code. This determines if the requests all come into that WLM, right? In one part, you're talking about a cluster all one part. Once it comes there, then it determines what I need to do with this weight, where I should send more load, right? Then only it does behavior. You kind of having your own WLM outside, which is your, I mean, load balancing, whatever, right? Then it will be all taken care of there itself, I mean.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Ken Okorofor. Your line is open.
Yes. Hi. My question is this. In my environment, basically, I have a vertical and horizontal clusters. But what happens is sometimes when a cluster member fails, users will have some issues, you know, logging in or have some error messages on their browser. So what can I do to avoid, you know, or to make the automatic failover, you know, be able to avoid this from happening?
Two things you have to check. One is make sure the memory-to-memory replication has been enabled or created when you have created the cluster. Okay? So that is a session failover. When you talk about a user logging in and the information is kind of lost, it means your memory-to-memory replication is not working there. So make sure that it's created. If it is created, then we need to see, I mean, why the request is not moving in, right? And because even though the session management will maintain a cache and it will be passed over to the next cluster member immediately and your request should not fail there. So that could be one reason. And another reason could be like it depends on like how many number of clusters you have. Do you have, is it all in one node or it's all in different node?
Okay, so more of a horizontal cluster in two different nodes.
Okay. Just two cluster members then you have?
Yes. In some environments, it's more like, vertical and horizontal clusters, which means up to three member clusters vertically and two member clusters horizontal.
Okay. Definitely, we should be able to figure out why it is behaving like that with the session trace enabled and WLM tracing enabled. I would advise you to open a PMR if you already have session replication and all enabled there and you have everything configured, then I would advise you to open a PMR so that we should be able to figure out why it is failing. But it should not if it is already configured.
Okay, so you don't think it has anything to do with the load balancer?
No.
No?
If the request already, if it is in, I mean, it is serving the request and all other cluster members, at least if two cluster members are running, right, I expect, and if one goes down, I expect the request should be passed to the next cluster member. It should not die, and your users who are on the system should be able to directly redirect to that new JVM.
So if the user is already logged in and, that JVM, crashes or something, would the user have to log out and log back in or would it automatically redirect the user?
It should. That's why we have this WLM. It should redirect those to the next cluster member.
Okay, this WLM, where is it on the console? Because it's something new to me.
It all resides here and there. Some part of the code resides on Deployment Manager. You won't see it outside, actually.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Some resides on Node Agent and on the application servers as well.
All right.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
And our last question comes from Raju Aluri. Your line is open.
Hi. My question is related to the weights that we talked earlier. If it is a configuration change, you mentioned it needs to be, the servers needs to be recycled, the cluster members. How that change will be replicated to the plugin? So do we have to regenerate the plugin to reflect the new weights?
Yes. Okay. You do a configuration. I think if you have some automatic provocation enabled, I think it will automatically provocate your plugin, generate and move it there. If not, you have to manually propagate the plugin and, regenerate and propagate the plugin.
Okay.
But if you do it dynamic thing, runtime, you don't have to worry about it. It knows, what it will be updating all that dynamic stuff, so you don't really have to worry about it.
Right. So that during the runtime, if I modify the weights, then the plugin will ignore whatever. See, for example, the configuration has 2-2, and the plugin will have the same weights representing it. And then during runtime, if I change it to 4 and 2, what happens? Plugin will be still having the value as 2-2.
Oh, wait a minute. I think it may not even, because this runtime will be effective only for your RMI and your EJP request, not your HTTP request.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I don't think, I'm sorry, it's not even going to come into the picture when you update there, actually.
Oh, inside, okay. So after the cluster member gets the request, the EJBs and RMA calls is the one.
Yeah, exactly. That is the problem with the runtime, So I didn't realize, about the plugin, So it's not even going to get anything from there. It's all going to use the configured. Because runtime, when you do it, any EJB request, any of your IOP, RMA request, it's all because directly the request can go to the JVM. It's not going to go through your plugin, so it should, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, thanks.
We have no additional questions.
Thank you, Jackie. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.